Welcome to Why Fish Radio. Why Fish is brought to you by Today's Tackle, Cats on the Red, and Trophy Cat Adventures. Now, here they are, Brad and Brad.
Welcome back, folks. Show number 88. Can you believe it? We made it this long. Everybody's back together again. Brad's back. Like to thank Lynn Schlater from Game and Fish for joining us again last week. But Brad, you've had some adventures, so I gotta let you tell the story.
All right, yeah. Let's see. Where do we begin? I guess we'll go chronologically and start from the beginning. Let me think. Weekend before this past one, that Sunday, loaded up the truck and headed east in northeastern Minnesota. Had the good fortune of being able to spend a day and a half on Lake Cabotogama, which is in northeastern Minnesota. It'd be south of International Falls if you look on a map. Basically, it's the gateway to Voyageurs National Park. And, of course, Voyageurs National Park is situated right on the Minnesota-Ontario border, kind of the gateway to that whole chain of Boundary Waters lakes, Canadian Shield, just absolutely beautiful, gorgeous stuff. But had a chance to stay at a place on Cabotogama called Voyageur Park Lodge. It's actually managed by a young man originally from East Grand Forks by the name of Casey DeZeal. And we'd been corresponding a little bit and invited a photographer and I to go over there for a couple of days. So it was one of those twist our arms, okay, we'll do it kind of deals. And we spent the day on Cabotogama and adjacent Namakan. I mean, great names for lakes. I mean, with names like that, you know they're going to have some fish in them. And we fished with a guide who actually is born and raised in that area. His name is Tim Watson. Has a business called Cabotogama Angling Adventures. Spent some time teaching school. I ran a resort for a few years, and he and his wife are settled down there. And I must say that when it comes to wives, this guy has done everything right, because a couple of years ago he'd asked his wife if he could have permission to put a new motor on his boat, and she said, "Well, why do that? Why don't you just go out and buy a new boat?"
Ah, shucks.
So that's what he did, and when it came time to putting electronics in the boat, he was looking at one, a Lowrance color unit, but his wife was with him, and she saw one with a much bigger screen and a few more bells and whistles, and she said, "Well, geez, why don't you buy that one?" So he did, and it's a Lowrance, I believe it's the X110. It's an amazing, amazing depth finder, and you know, it's like watching TV out there. But you know, like he said, it's just all in how you have them trained. So you know, maybe there's some inspiration for you there.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm gonna talk a little quieter from that one, I think.
But I digress. Anyway, it was the day that we were fishing. We actually had to battle a fair bit of wind, but it was a good you know, kind of testimonial for what you can do up in that area, because even with the wind howling, we were able to stay out of the wind. You can usually tuck behind an island, and that's what we did. And it was a classic fall pattern that was setting up there. The fish were moving out, the walleyes were moving out of kind of shallow bays and sucking down into that deep drop off. You'd find them either there or in you know, kind of basins at the narrows between islands. Those two spots, you'd pull up. Sure enough, you'd be marking a bunch of fish, and they were usually walleyes. We caught fish that day anywhere from 26 to 40 feet of water, and fall colors were at their prime, bald eagles everywhere. And you know, the neat thing about Voyageurs is, you know, unlike the Boundary Waters, if you like tooling around in a motorboat, you can do that. It's not a canoe only spot, but they have just an amazing you know, selection of campsites on all the islands. And all you have to do is you know, just I guess get a permit from the Park Service. As I understand it, there's no charge for them. And you know, a lot of the campsites, there's actually docks. They have these bear-proof lockers where you can put your coolers and stuff like that, so you don't have to worry about little furry visitors invading your campsite. A lot going for that area. I'll definitely go back there again. Very impressed. And we were going to fish the second day, kind of mix it up a little bit with walleyes in the morning and grouse in the afternoon, but woke up to about a 40-mile-an-hour wind that eventually kind of segued into rain on top of it. So we decided, well, we had a pretty good day Monday. We got done what we needed to get done. Maybe we'll just take a rain check on this one and pay another visit. So the weather hurt us a little bit, but like I say, just an absolutely beautiful area.
And having seen a few of the pictures in your story that came out of it, looks like a marvelous place. I got to say, your photographer is pretty impressive with that eagle shot he got.
That was a great shot, wasn't it? I mean, you know, just the way he captured the you know, kind of the location of the wings and the wing beat there. That's a great shot. And you know, the shot of the deer coming down to the island there right before dark, that was pretty cool too. But he actually goes up there, you know, makes a solo trip all by himself every year, either early in the spring or later in the fall, and takes his boat. And you know, if you get to a rainy day, he kicks back with a book and spends it in the tent. But usually gets a fair bit of fishing in too. And there's a slot limit there. You can only keep walleyes between 13 and 17 inches in length. And then you can have one over 23 inches. You can still keep six fish, but there's that harvest slot. And, you know, kind of the consensus in talking to the folks up there is that it's really enhanced the number of big fish you're catching. And it's true. The fish up there were chunky. They were well fed. And we didn't get any real monsters that day. The biggest was about 21 inches. But I tell you what, you know, I'll take a 21-inch walleye anytime I can get it.
Well, that sounds like a good adventure, and I'm going to break in before you get to the next one, because I heard the story, actually I read it in an email from you. Man, that's going to take the cake right up there with me sinking a boat, I think, that story. But you haven't even heard this, I don't think. Our buddy John Falk, otherwise known as Esox Pirate, is in Iraq. Did you know that even?
I did. I understand he left here, I guess, a few weeks, maybe months back now.
Well, anyway, he has a blog that we're kind of helping him run here at Why Fish, and it's esoxpirate.blogspot.com, and one of these days I'm going to actually get it linked into the site so you can just link over from the front page. But he got his fishing rod. This is the reading for this week. He got his fishing rod from his parents, so he's going to fish the Euphrates. And I know you haven't had the opportunity to listen to last week's show, but our good buddy Lynn Schlater wrote me a note while I'm talking about this site, and it said, "Tell him to be careful trolling with F-16s.
Yeah, I could imagine that among other hazards.
So anyway, I had to touch on that before you moved along. And you know, folks, we'll get the commercial part of the show done here too. Cats on the Red, who we talk about here every week, and we're going to continue to talk about them every week because they take good care of us here at the show. But the walleyes are moving in. We got an email from Canuck. It was this morning, I believe. It was addressed to both of us. And they caught two big ones in about 2 hours, and some eater-sized ones as well. So the fall run is officially on. So catsonthered.net, they're taking reservations for that. If you want a big walleye and a neat-looking walleye, that's the place to be. Bruce Mosier over at Today's Tackle. You know, ice is just around the corner. We say it every week now, it seems like. But lots of cool stuff over there. You got to stock up early before the stores sell out of this stuff. So todaystackle.com for more information, or your local sporting goods store. Anyway, let's hear adventure number two.
Misadventure, I think we'll characterize this one. Yes, this was actually over the weekend now, and got together with my oldest brother, which is something that doesn't happen very often. And we were out in his boat, not his only boat, but his little boat that he saves for, you know, the little backwater out of the way places. It's a little light 12-foot rig with a four horse, and I can't remember if it's an Evinrude or a Johnson. I mean, they're pretty much the same, you know, an OMC product at any rate. Little four horse, hadn't been run in 2 years. It had been gathering dust in the shed, and decided to, you know, just start it up real quick before we hit the water just to make sure it would run. It popped right off. I think it took probably four pulls. So away we go. We get the boat in the water, and we're heading out, and we've gone probably about 2 miles or so. We've done a little bit of trolling. No fish yet, but we're heading to a honey hole. Well, all of a sudden, the engine starts to lose power, and the next thing you know, there's this nasty smell of something really hot. And long story short, apparently something went wrong with probably the impeller. It infected the water intake. Engine overheated. Luckily, it didn't fry it, but it would not start anymore at that point. So we were, you know, literally up the proverbial creek without. Well, we had one paddle, but we didn't have two, unfortunately, at that point. So had to improvise.
Proverbial, literal.
Literal, exactly. But we had to improvise. And lucky for me, I had brought my my old Vexilar FL8 along, and I have a high-speed transducer on that for that unit. I have it mounted on a board. Well, the only thing I could find that I could use as a paddle was that board, so I took the transducer itself off and proceeded to spend the next hour paddling with a little board about 2 feet long. It took a little while, but we finally got back to the landing, and as luck would have it, there was no one else there to see us, because it probably would have looked like quite the sight. But, you know, it was one of those things, you know, there's a few colorful words that are uttered at the get-go, but we had some pretty good laughs about it along the way, and, you know, it's not like we were in any danger or anything. You just, you know, I guess the moral of this story, and certainly will be one that we'll be following in this case, is make sure you got two oars in the boat. If you have two people in the boat, it's going to improve your life considerably, or, you know, some other backup motor, trolling motor, something like that.
You know, you told me about that. First thing I thought of is I got one oar in the 14-foot riverboat. I think I should go shopping.
Exactly. Well, I have one oar in my 16-foot Crestliner. You know, a lot of good that's going to do. Usually you'll have a trolling motor on it, so you can limp along a little bit that way, but I tell you what, two oars would have speeded up that process considerably, and really would have made, you know, but I guess on the other hand, it wouldn't have made for nearly as good of a story, but I was really wishing I would have, and I can remember looking at the oar I have in the other boat we had in the shed there before we left that day. It was sitting right there, and I thought, well, maybe I should grab that, and thought, well, geez, what am I going to need that for? It's just one more thing that's going to get in the way, so... Needless to say, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good when it's sitting in a shed several miles away.
Well, that reminds me of my trick 2 years ago when we were having trouble with that little 10 horse that was once on the red boat that is no longer around. But the motor started on the trailer, started up beautifully, got pushed off the trailer into the red, and kicked it in gear, and away I went in the current. Now, here's my situation. No paddles. I oared myself back to the shore with an anchor. I'd throw it, pull it up real fast, throw it as far as I could, reel it up real fast. So I think you win, even using your transducer board.
Yeah, but I think what you were doing is what they would probably call gimping along. And, yeah, it wasn't, you know, like I say, we would have had to have looked like quite the sight paddling along there, and I'm really glad there was no one there to see it.
So... Well, always fun here. And, you know, folks, if you've been listening to this show at all, you know we have some pretty interesting tales to tell. And believe me, we don't look for this stuff. It just comes to us, apparently, you know, like hooking up on rocks in, 8 inches of water in the middle of the night and hitting trees and almost sinking boats and just add it to a long list of things that happen, and we do not script it or try it.
Yeah, you don't try this at home, whatever you do. It's one of those things, though, I think. I mean, if you look back on a fishing year, you know, it's some of those little misadventures. As long as you're using common sense and live to tell about it, those are the things you're going to remember. And, I mean, we've been lucky. You know, we don't take any stupid chances. Like you say, sometimes misadventure falls into your lap, but... When you throw some common sense in on top of it, it's you'll get a pretty good story out of it in the end. But, you know, like I say, the lesson here in my case is keep that second oar in the boat at all times.
That's our message for the week, by the way. But I did have an adventure, and you're going to take very good interest in this. I got to fish again. 3 weeks off. I finally got a rod in my hand. Can you believe it? And I came to the conclusion... And I actually wrote a little article about it, because at about the 18 to 20 day mark, I was starting to show signs of your traditional alcoholic or drug addict, where withdrawals seemed to be setting in. I mean, just doing goofy stuff. But I managed to get in the boat, get some bait on a hook, and get the old jigging arm going. Fishing was, well, not even really worth bragging about, to tell you the truth. But, you know, the bottom line is I got in the water. I got to fish, and I feel so much better.
Well, and you know, those days in the boat right now are a pretty precious commodity, because they are very limited. It's just a matter of time. I mean, you know, let's face it here. We're in October right now, and anything from here on out to freeze up whenever that happens is bonus time. And, I mean, even if it's just for a couple hours here and there and fish aren't jumping into the boat, it's still a boat.
Well, I think the biggest part of it is... I was thinking back the last few years, and as best I've been able to figure out, excluding deer season, which usually in my world runs about 5 weeks. It was about 2002 the last time I went 3 weeks without fishing in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, that's, you know, 3 weeks off for me is a pretty long time, with the exception of the deer hunting season, where I am occupied.
Right, and you were kind of in that transition time there between open water and hard water anyway, but that is, like you say, a long time. But, you know, I think about friends I have that go fishing once a year, and I can't even fathom what that must be like. I mean, I guess they just don't enjoy it. They don't have the passion for it that I do. But if I had to limit myself to going fishing once a year, I think I'd be pretty cranky. I think you remember me a couple of Junes back. We had one of those Junes where it was raining and wet and cold, and it wasn't that, you know, I was unable to catch fish. It wasn't like I went fishing and didn't catch anything. I just couldn't get out. You know, the days you were going to go, the wind would blow, or the river you were going to fish was flooding. And I went a whole month without catching a walleye, and I was really, really cranky. But I finally did catch one then, 4th of July weekend that year. And the rest of the summer just kept getting better, so I finished nicely. But I can relate, and it's not a good thing.
Yep, so anyway, I feel much better. In fact, I went out, caught a couple catfish last night, and that's where I really noticed that the days are getting shorter, where you get off work at 5 o'clock and try to scramble down and get in the river and get on your spot, and next thing you know, it's 7:30 and it's dark, and you know, the cooler water, the cooler nights, it seems the cats are hardly on a night bite. So, you know, that's coming to an end, I guess, in my schedule, just because of pure lack of time in the daylight hours to get out and move.
Absolutely. And you know, when you look back on it, the summer's gone really fast. I mean, it's not that long ago that the two of us decided on a Friday that, you know, geez, maybe we should go fishing over lunch break. And the next thing you know, a one-hour lunch break had become a little bit longer. I think we got probably 2 hours and you know, caught 6-8 kitties up to, you know, including a couple of fish over 20 pounds. Definitely one of the highlights of the year. And I mean, we've certainly had many others. The annual trip up to Lockport, the adventure into Winnipeg, a side trip into Crow Duck Lake, you know, a couple of hot days on Devil's Lake. There's just been a lot of really cool stuff that's happened this summer.
Crow Duck was already 10 weeks ago.
It's amazing that it's gone by that fast, you know, but the whole summer's kind of been that way. And, you know, we'll look back on it, and certainly we got the photos and the memories of that, but we've also got some good laughs, and anytime you could pull that off, you're not doing all bad.
Yep. Well, you know, we're running out of time here, but there's one thing I want to mention, and it's not even fishing related. And I was reading my outdoor news on Friday, or what day did I get, Sunday, when I got home, and I noticed that the kids who burned the snapping turtle, the kid got some jail time and a big fine out of the deal. And I just wanted to say I'm very happy about that.
Absolutely. I mean, what an absolutely inexcusable act. You know, low class. What possesses people to do those kinds
and
of things?
For those of you who have not heard from other places around the country, some kids got this brilliant idea to dump gas on a snapping turtle, start it on fire, do a little jig around the turtle while he was on fire, and then post it on the internet. And charges for cruelty were brought, and I think it ended up being like 1 day in jail and a whole bunch of community service and a couple $100 fine. And you know what? Justice served in my eyes for that one.
Justifiably so. You know, I couldn't have said it better myself. But wrapping up, anything else on your plate right now?
No, that's it for this week. I had to step away and mention that. So I'm done for this week. We'll see you guys next week.
So until next week, here endeth the lesson. Keep your hook in the water, keep your line tight, and most of all, keep it fun.
Thank you for listening to Why Fish Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for another Adventures in Fishing. For more information, log on to whyfishradio.com.